But first, perhaps the most profound kind of speech disorder, when someone, usually a child, finds that they can't speak at all in certain situations. The condition is known as selective mutism. It's rare, and its causes are little understood, although it's known to affect more girls than boys. Rachel Buckenham, now in her 20s, had SM as a child. We asked her and her mum, Sally Potter, to describe their experience.
The thought of having to talk terrified me, and it was almost the thought of being put on the spot and being made to. It's a real anxiety is the word that I would use for it now, but not because I thought anything bad would happen to me, so I'm not really sure what the... if there was any rationalisation going on. But I just remember being so scared of doing it that it was actually as if my lips wouldn't move. It was almost like a sort of physical thing preventing me from speaking. When you look back on the school photos and things that were taken, and even the play school ones, you can see the point that I'd started to talk, because suddenly I started to smile in the photos. And it was so physical that I wouldn't even smile or anything. I'd just sit there completely straight-faced.
When Rachel was very newly at play school, we were getting ready for bed. And when she took her tights off, I was aware that on both shins she'd got three big bruises, big lumpy bruises. And nothing had come back from play school about her having an accident or anything. So I just very quietly said to her, "Oh, what happened there?" And all Rachel said to me was, "Mummy, I didn't cry." I think at that point I started to realise, and there was the disquiet, that this was something that was not quite normal. This was about what would normally be a reflex action of a child, a baby, toddler, only three, crying in pain and being comforted, and that didn't happen. And that did disturb me, because nobody had comforted my child when she'd been hurt, because she hadn't told anybody.
At home, I certainly didn't have any trouble talking. It's quite embarrassing watching back some of the family videos we've got. I was incredibly bossy to my little brother, and I think any other children that are around as well.
There was an awful lot of soul searching that went on. We thought that we'd given her a normal, regular upbringing. There'd been no traumatic experiences. I thought that we'd been good in making sure that she had a good social life with all the possible stimulus that any normal child would want. So we couldn't really work out anything at all. The health visitors didn't really know, the doctors didn't really know, just thought, well, you know, at least you haven't got a noisy one.
I think there's a misunderstanding that some people think it's maybe just a child being difficult or not wanting to do something, but it was a very definite and real thing for me at the time.
There were huge frustrations at times. I knew that I'd got a very bright, able young child, and I had to sit through all the concerts and things like that with my daughter not participating, and yet I knew that she could do as well, if not better, than others. So sometimes I probably was not the most caring, loving mother. So there were a lot of anxious times of thinking, what's going to become of her and how are we going to get through this?
What we started doing was Mum would come in after school, and we started just down the corridor, me reading to Mum, but really quietly, a whisper, so I don't think even Mum could really hear. And the teacher would be in the classroom just pretending that she wasn't really paying us any attention at all. And gradually we moved along the corridor towards the classroom, and eventually I read in the classroom with her pretending she wasn't listening. And then finally managed to read to her in the classroom after school.
And once we got her talking, Rachel was very confident and became able to speak very quickly. Within about 3 months, Rachel stood up and led the school assembly. From beginning to talk in school to that was a massive step forward. And she's not really looked back since.
When you stop and think about how difficult it is to get through a day without speaking, then you suddenly realise you must be pretty scared to do it if it's, you know, easier to go through all that palaver rather than just speaking.
Rachel Buckenham and her mother, Sally Potter. Earlier, I spoke to Michael Jones, a speech therapist who's carried out research into selective mutism and is pioneering a new therapy to help children with the condition. I asked him why the terminology had changed from elective mutism, as it used to be known, to selective mutism.
It's not just tautology, Michael. It's not just a play on words or political correctness. These two phrases, these two words, elective and selective, they represent a state of mind and an understanding of what the difficulty is. So traditionally, the word elective mutism was used because it was understood that the children were electing not to speak.
Choosing
not to speak. Now, If you think that a young child is choosing not to speak, you could interpret their behaviour as being in some way naughty or difficult or challenging.
Or stubborn,
indeed. And that can be quite threatening for adults, particularly teachers, where typically the problem exists. But if you're saying that the child is selectively mute, what you're actually saying is that the child is not choosing to be silent, but is unable to speak in selected environments. So it's actually the environment which is causing the child to be unable to speak, typically in school. So your approach then, your therapy or your approach as an adult, is first of all, when you say selective mutism, is to be very sympathetic, because you see it very similar to something like a phobia.
And do you talk about causes? Do you understand there to be causes for this condition?
In terms of research, it's actually not clear at all what the causes are. There are many different reasons why children find themselves unable to speak. But there comes to a point where you don't really know what the cause is, but you know how to help. So you could go very deeply as a therapist or a psychotherapist or counsellor into the cause of the anxiety, but it might not get you anywhere. But what most researchers do, or most people working with children with selective mutism do, is we actually start with an understanding with the children that they are anxious about speaking, and then we work from there.
Is there a clear difference in your mind between a child who's shy and a child who is selectively mute?
Yes, there's a very clear difference. Children who are extremely shy can become selectively mute, but in general, the definition is of selective mutism where a child wishes to communicates very well in the home, but is actually feels themselves physically unable to communicate in strange situations. There has to be a time gap between when a child starts school, playgroup or nursery, and when you decide that they are selectively mute, because you have to distinguish selective mutism from those transitory situations which many, many children go through but come out of the other end quite well.
So tell me about your approach.
Well, what I'm interested in is the comfort zone, the concept of the comfort zone, because the children are able to communicate very, very well at home. But as soon as they come out of their front door, and typically as soon as they head towards school, they start to close up. And my interest as a researcher and as a speech and language therapist is actually extending that comfort zone. First of all, I was very intrigued by something which I actually picked up on Radio 4, which is the concept that if two adults have got a problem, typically in a relationship, very often counsellors will say, go for a long drive. You're sitting side by side, you're looking straight ahead. And very often, if you have a difficulty that you want to discuss, the conversation will start to flow. That wouldn't happen if you were sitting opposite each other with the intention of talking. And I thought, well, what would happen if we actually started off by introducing a couple of fun pieces of computer software into the child's home? And then the child becomes very involved with that program, very interested in it. They're educational programs. And I thought, well, perhaps we could use that to make the children more confident about speaking in school with other children. So you are doing two things at once. First of all, you're extending their comfort zone because they're taking their program that they know about to school. They're working on a computer side by side with somebody else who is their friend, with their back to everybody else. This, in my mind, seemed to be a very, very good way of children actually using their voices for the first time or comfortably in the school situation. That was the theory. And what we're actually finding is that this is working. It's working perfectly well and the children are really enjoying it.
Michael Jones. And if you'd like more information about SMERA, the charity that supports families affected by SM, you can get their details from our webpage or via the BBC helpline. Details at the end of the programme.